Hello, you're listening to The Women Room, brought to you by journalists and best mates, Charlie Gowans Eglinton, that's me, and Frankie Gradden, that's her. Hello, Francesca.
Hello, Charlotte.
Twice in one day. Frankie, it's haunting my house, and I like it.
We were meant to record the podcast this morning, but then a work scenario came up, so here we are, back in the evening, sushi orders on the way.
Lamp lit.
Very cosy in here, I must say. Quite a nice vibe for what is to be our final podcast of the current series before I go and have a baby.
This time next week,
I'm going to have an actual baby. I mean, I've already got one. I'm going to have another.
He is big now, though.
We can't call him a baby anymore, can we?
Honestly, my arms were absolutely achy after I carried him the other day.
He is big, but yeah, this little one's coming next Monday between the hours of 9 and 1. That's the joy of a planned cesarean.
How organised.
I mean, I just don't know why we don't all do it like that anyway.
It sounds jolly. Do you meet your doctor and do you know all the people that you're going to get?
No, I don't think so.
That's how I imagine it. But then my imagining of a planned cesarean is sort of like you're American at like a glossy Upper East Side. I was going to say hotel. I meant hospital, but kind of that vibe.
Yeah.
You know, when you say planned cesarean, I think of that because it's much more common in America.
Yes.
And very uncommon, I think, in the UK. Or certainly people don't talk about it.
Culturally, there is still a hurdle over cesareans in the UK. It varies so wildly across the globe. I think in Brazil, it's really common to have a cesarean, more common than not. And yes, in America, you go and get your blow dry, you get your nails done, whip a kid out, home by lunchtime the next day. Lovely. But over here, we're still all, you're too posh to push. There's still a stigma attached to having a planned cesarean.
Which is stupid.
Well, it's just...
People should fuck off.
They should. And it's not that it's the easy option, because essentially they are cutting through your abdominal muscles and the recovery is not pleasant. But it takes a lot of jeopardy out of it because you're not thinking, oh, am I about to go into labour? If you already have a child, you can organise childcare, which is very important and practical. You know exactly when you need to take time off work, when your maternity or paternity leave needs to start.
Mm-hmm. And also, if you had a stressful delivery the first time and had an emergency cesarean, as you did, being able to simplify things and know what's going to happen more, be able to control that a bit, must feel so different and so nice.
It feels hugely comforting, I must say. There's so much judgment around how women give birth. I actually wrote a piece today, hence why we couldn't record the podcast this morning, in response to the ban on gas and air that some NHS trusts are implementing because they're worried about the exposure that midwives and doctors are having to, I can't remember what the gas is called. It's laughing gas. So they're worried about the NHS staff, so they're putting a ban on it for women in labour. And obviously, NHS staff's health and wellbeing is paramount. But to take away an effective, quick pain relief that doesn't have any side effects for the baby or mother, it can make you a bit nauseous, but it's regarded as a very, very safe method of pain relief. To take that away feels barbaric, I think.
Especially because it seems to be the only pain relief that isn't judged.
Yeah.
People expect you to have the gas and air.
Yeah.
But if you've had anything stronger...
Yes. When I went through my first labour, all of the things I was listening to, the hypnobirthing, kind of also the NCT, the pregnancy yoga, it was all about having a natural water birth without any other pain medication. And you just think, this is nuts. I'm pushing a child out of my vagina. I'm pushing a big thing out of a small thing. Not to put anyone off having kids, but it hurts. So why is there this idea that having pain medication is somehow a cop-out, you're somehow not experiencing the whole magical experience? Like, it's not magical. It's magical when you see your baby, but the bit before is not very magical.
Being completely present in the moment as your, like, perineum tears, I imagine, not magical.
No.
You could take the edge off that.
Yeah.
That would be great. Why would you want to really hold on to that memory and remember every second? Somebody fishing a poo out of your water bath.
I don't need to remember that.
It could be hazy. Do you need a crystal clear memory?
Probably not.
You know? Fine if you want one. Important question though. because this time you're having the planned cesarean and you're not going to have 48 hours of labour.
Yeah.
Or however many you had. 72?
I think it was 72.
Because you're not going to have that, you could do pregnancy glam. Are you doing pregnancy glam?
People doing their makeup to go into labour. I don't think so.
And some people will get their nails done. You can't have that, right?
So, yeah, you have to take your shellac off in case your nails turn blue and they can't notice.
Oh,
I think it's something to do with that. Yeah. Okay. Pre-cesarean blow dry. That's a real thing.
People get eyebrow and lash tinting and stuff. So they've got natural but not natural.
Natural but enhanced. I quite like the idea of it. But I've left myself too much to do this week to book in.
That's fine.
Do you know what? I should have got my eyebrows tinted because this is a weird pregnancy side effect. Added to my list of weird pregnancy side effects. My already sparse fair eyebrows have practically disappeared.
I'm so sorry. I can see them, but you're quite close to me.
These are penciled in. If I wash my face, it looks like they've been photoshopped off. It's so weird.
I did not know that was a pregnancy side effect.
There you go. I've also got my nice little beard of dry skin. So maybe I should have booked in for a facial beforehand. Maybe I could pack some hydrating sheet masks in my hospital bag. Because the thing is there's quite a lot of time to kill.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're in labour, there's just quite a lot of time that you're not really doing much. And I have to wait in a queue to get my cesarean. We don't know exactly when I'm going in. You don't have a time slot. You just all have to go there at 7 in the morning and see what happens. You can't eat, so you can't fill the time snacking, which is sad. So maybe I could do some face masking. And maybe I could find time to pencil in an eyebrow so as not to alarm the baby when she arrives.
She might recognise you more, though, if you're hairless also. Because she's hairless, she might...
She can identify.
Maybe you'll just have a moment.
She'll be like, Mama? The mirror image.
Ben's quite hairless.
Just like family of seals.
A baby egg and two... I was thinking eggs. Great. Speaking of things that are bouncy and nice, shall we talk about what we've been up to, which is we went on an outing last week. Frankie, take it away.
We went to see Magic Mike.
We sure did.
Magic Mike, The Last Dance. It's his finale.
I should hope so, because it's one of the worst films I've ever seen. And if anybody watched that and thought, we've got more gas in this tank, we could squeeze another film out of this, then they are blind.
I am a diehard Magic Mike fan. And even I have to admit, it was one of the worst films I've ever seen. Terrible. It took me about 10 minutes to realise that it was bad. But you guys twigged probably in the first 30 seconds.
The sparks, or lack of sparks and energy between Channing Tatum and Salma Hayek in the kind of first scene that they have together, it was remarkable. The script was awful. I honestly questioned whether they were in the room together when they were doing the dialogue, but then they were obviously in the room together, very much so together, but it wasn't hot. I didn't think it was hot. Did you think it was hot?
No, I was wearing actually this jumper that's got quite a chunky turtleneck, and I was disappearing into it for most of that sequence. It was quite stressful. And I do really fancy Channing Tatum, and he does take his top off, but even that couldn't save it for me. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Salma Hayek, what an absolute babe.
Phenomenal.
But still.
Because I don't fancy Channing Tatum, but Salma Hayek, I'm there.
But even with the high levels of attractiveness going on, it was awful. It was so cringe.
It was just... I've never laughed so much. We were in a really small cinema in King's Cross, which was very lovely and bougie and sat on sofas. And absolutely everyone was having a laugh. So that was nice.
It felt a bit Hindu-esque, didn't it?
It 100% did.
There was some weeping.
There was some weeping.
A good night had by all, but don't rush out and buy tickets.
Do not. You could 100% wait for that one to go to VHS.
No judgment on taste levels, guys.
Absolutely no judgment.
Watch what you want to watch. Speaking of cringy celebrities...
While we're being mean to people.
I've been very much enjoying the coverage of Brooklyn and Nicole's wedding, aka a shit show, which is what Daddy Peltz has called it.
I too am obsessed. I find Brooklyn Beckham very compelling to watch. I enjoy being on the journey as he navigates career options and kitchens. the really basic dishes that he chooses to cook for an audience. He did a pancake day. David, Victoria and Brooklyn Beckham all Instagrammed pancake day flipping videos. But the Brooklyn slow motion of him flipping a pancake, heavily burnt on one side. So he's obviously done a few different takes of this video and hasn't wanted to make another pancake. Run out of batter, just doing it for the gram. No one's eating that afterwards. Remarkable. I'm so here for this. This is a Nepo family against everything that I, you know, believe in. I'm interested. I want to know. And I love all of these details. I love that they apparently hid the problems from the Beckhams. I love that apparently the bill for Nicola's hair and makeup was $100,000.
Wild.
She is an exceptionally beautiful woman. It is one day.
What makeup did they use to warrant that amount of money?
But were they just private jetting in hair and makeup artists?
Right.
Maybe they chose people top of their game, but just for specific things. So like, I really like how she does eyebrows.
Okay.
But nothing else.
Sure.
You know?
Let's get someone separate for the statement lip.
Yeah. And then one person does the eyeliner flicks.
Yeah.
Someone else comes in to like put on the mascara.
Sure.
Maybe they're just a really crack team. And that would cost a lot.
So Mama Peltz.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't want to tell Papa Peltz about that bill.
No.
Which I think was quite hilarious. Obviously, he knows now. The whole wedding cost £3 million,
mm-hmm.
which is wild. I mean, you've got a feel for these poor wedding planners. That's kind of a poison chalice, isn't it? Being called up and asked if you can do the Beckham Peltz wedding. Because you know you're going to get a massive fee, but you also know it's going to be probably the worst month of your whole life. So they were drafted in last minute after someone else had to step aside or was pushed aside. Who knows? They're now being sued for £133,000, which is the deposit, by Papa Peltz, who is an actual billionaire.
But also, I enjoy that on that budget, there was still discussion of bringing in some Wendy's food to do a bit of product placement.
Oh yeah, because he's on the Wendy's board, isn't he?
Papa Peltz, Nelson.
Nelson.
He's Peltz. The chairman and major shareholder. And apparently Brooklyn suggested a Brooklyn burger that was a double or single burger and a Nicola burger that was a lettuce instead of a bun. I hate that gendered, diet-pushing, women-don't-eat-carbs narrative.
I do, but I do doubt that she eats carbs.
Apparently she loves everything he cooks, Francesca. Are you saying that you don't believe it when he says he makes that pasta and that cheese wheel for her all the time and that is her favourite meal and that she eats it up? You're such a cynic.
I love it. There was a bouquet of peonies that weren't white enough,
mm-hmm.
which is quite brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently Brooklyn had to be cut out of the guest list discussion because, quote from Nicola, "I do not trust Brooklyn with this." Which sounds like the kind of man you want to be marrying and spending the rest of your life with. Absolutely perfect. I mean, look, the thing is, they're super young. I didn't realise that Brooklyn's only 23. God, he's been around for bloody ages, hasn't he? They're super young. And like, you know, they've been given a lot of money at a very young age. So it's no wonder they're absolute prats. But Jesus Christ. How bloody fantastic.
I truly do think, though, this is like the upside of Nepo babies. Because what joy for watching.
Yeah.
You would never get this from someone self-made. You would never get this kind of behaviour. It's enjoyable. They're just floundering billionaires with terrible taste.
More money than sense.
More money than sense. Glorious.
I wrote another piece that was out today.
She's busy.
Super busy.
She's hustling.
The hottest accessory right now, Charlie. Kids.
Right.
Could I be more on trend?
You couldn't. Could I be less on trend?
Let me explain further.
Okay.
We're halfway through the International Fashion Months and kids on the front row, babies on the catwalk. Mm-hmm. It's a big thing. At the Prenda Shula show in New York, Sienna Miller sat fro with her 10-year-old, Marlo,
mm-hmm.
who was clutching a little Dior saddlebag and chatting to Anna Wintour. I wonder what they were chatting about.
I couldn't tell you. What have they got in common? Colours.
Favourite colours, do you think?
Yeah.
I wonder what Anna's is.
Well, you know that Devil Wears Prada bit?
Oh, Cerulean Blue.
Exactly.
Yeah. At London Fashion Week, there was a small baby on the catwalk at one of the shows.
That seems really irresponsible.
Carried by his dad. Yeah, I know. It was like a funny one. It's that moment where you're just like, is that cute or is that a bit weird and disturbing that there's a tiny baby on a catwalk in front of lots of people and like flash photography and some music that's probably not...
normally very loud music.
Yeah. Anyway, obviously we've just had the big Rihanna cover from Vogue where her baby also stars.
Mm-hmm.
My favourite nugget of information from that is that the baby has his own stylist for the shoot.
Gorgeous.
Brilliant. I mean, the baby was wearing a nappy and then a blanket in another picture. So not a huge challenge, I imagine.
He was wearing them well.
They were just that perfect shade of white.
Mm-hmm. Nicola would love that, you know, when she has her own children, the Beckham children.
Earlier this year in Jan at Couture Week, Apple Martin, Gwyneth and Chris's very beautiful offspring, she made her couture show debut. She wasn't walking, but she was sat on the front row at Chanel, head to toe in the designer's garb.
We had Tammy Girl, she has Chanel, but we can relate.
Same, same. So anyway, it seems like this season, it is all about having a very beautifully dressed, beautiful child with rich and famous parents being flaunted around in the spotlight. Is it cute? Is it a bit weird and icky?
I'd go weird and icky. Also, I used to fucking hate people bringing their children to fashion shows because I would be the intern or the assistant who worked through the night, interning for years, then you're on minimum wage, grafting, trying to get a ticket. You get your first ticket. And then on the front row, I used to have editors who I would have to call up the PR and say, can so-and-so bring her 12-year-old?
Who probably doesn't really want to be there.
Doesn't want to be there. I can't see anything. You don't see the shoes for like the first 5 years of your career. I used to hate it so much. It's weird posturing to me. But there will be some children who do want to see the shows. If Apple Martin is entering her Nepo Baby era, this is clearly a moment. Who was the other one that you said?
Marlo Sturridge.
Is she quite young?
She's 10. Okay. Sienna Miller's kid.
Fine. If she shoots up in height, they'll pop them on the catwalk at 14, won't they? Dolce & Gabbana loves a weirdly young Nepo child catwalk moment.
Well, then how old was Kai Gerber when she...
She was 16 and it was the Calvin Klein show at New York Fashion Week. And I was there. And she looked just like her mother. Very striking, very beautiful, but also like a 16-year-old. Which is weird that we want to see adult clothes that very few women can afford to buy. And certainly no teenager can afford to buy, or very few teenagers, and not off their own hard work, on a teenager.
Yeah, it's a weird one. And I think fashion has sort of long had this fascination with youth, obviously. But I think the point where it gets extremely young, and it is kind of those tweens, teens, that's where it's always felt a little bit worrying to me. I found it remarkable the amount of column inches that were dedicated to Suri Cruz's outfits. I mean, she was even younger. She was like under 10, you know, and she'd be seen out and about with her mum, the paparazzi shots, and everyone would be talking about this stylish infant and how to get the look. And that's weird.
So
because
weird.
She's a kid. Remember when Millie Bobby Brown first hit the spotlight after doing Stranger Things and the fashion industry was really courting her? And again, she was sub 16. And it was just this child, you know, on the red carpet dressed up in these designer clothes that were meant for adults. That's always felt quite uncomfortable to me. But fashion has sort of had this history of doing that. As a grown-up looking at that, that's not aspirational.
Totally weird. And it also feels strange because so much of that has shifted. Like, modelling used to have a real cut-off age and very few models would work into their 30s. That was very much the few. Now, we're used to seeing in our fashion adverts, on the high street, in designer, in beauty ads, we're used to seeing models in their 30s, 40s, 50s. We have 80-year-old supermodels now. So to have that kind of age diversity and surely that realisation that people are really interested in seeing clothes on those women. I mean, the press inches when Versace did that catwalk show with all the original supers and brought them out. That's a bigger splash. But I suppose there's always another beautiful 16-year-old waiting in the wings.
Yeah.
Maybe it's easier to get hold of them, you know, than convince
8 original supermodels to get out of bed when probably they don't need the cash anymore.
True.
So are you going to do this with Alf? What's his fashion look?
I mean, at the moment, it's very athleisure-based.
Mm.
We would really have to up it for him to be...
Depends on the design.
To be on the catwalks. I mean, also, babies are chaos.
Mm.
They're so unpredictable. Why do I want to put that into my big moment of unveiling my collection?
They're arguably better than teenage models, though. We both worked with teenage models.
Stroppy.
So rude.
At least they're not likely to do a wee.
But at least a child, you understand that you have to take them to the airport for them to get on their flights. A teenager, you trust them to be able to brush their teeth and remember their passport and do those basic things, and they can't do them. To generalise. Chaos.
Kids on the catwalk, weird. Let's stick to the adults, please.
I'm with you.
Thank you very much. Although, Versace, if you want to cast my son in your next campaign for a hefty sum, call me. You know?
Good, good. She's got a strong stance to a point. And that point is a paycheck.
Show me the money and I'll say yes.
And that's journalism. So, I feel both seen and attacked by a few articles about dry texting.
Uh-huh.
As in dry texters. One in Vogue a couple of weeks ago, taken from a dry texter, short text messages don't mean someone isn't interested. That was by Daisy Jones. And then another today, The Guardian, by Emma Beddington. Fine, I admit it, I'm a dry texter. It beats emojis or verbal diarrhea. Does it? Francesca, as the person that people text when I don't reply to text messages for so long that they don't know if something has happened to me, how do you feel about dry texters? I should say, it's just people who give one-word answers, don't really engage, don't do the chit-chat. We're dry as a bone. We're bad dates in text form.
Yeah, I mean, I've had to assure quite a few people that you have not, in fact, died.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just your vibe when it comes to texting. No, I don't mind a dry texter because I think my worst is when someone texts me an essay.
Mm-hmm. Is this where you like me then?
You're short, sharp and to the point.
I'm like burnt toast.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on the situation. If I'm trying to organise something and you're not getting back to me and it's an imminent plan, uh-huh. I might find that slightly annoying.
Uh-huh.
But I don't want a full breakdown of your day, of your week, because that feels like a lot of work to read through and then reply to. It's like friendship homework.
It's like friendship homework.
I'd rather you send a voice note because you can listen to it when you're free and available to listen, and then you can just shoot a little reply back, and it's quick and easy.
Yeah.
More spontaneous, you know. I quite like that.
I'm not always sure I want to listen to them. Sometimes I think, I don't know how long it's going to be. I don't know what the tone of it is. I'll come back to it.
Mm-hmm.
If you want me to reply faster, I might take my time listening to a voice note. But, I mean, I ignore everything, so that's fine. It's my personality. It's one of my many flaws. But I would say it's one of my worst flaws. I get overwhelmed. I put them behind me to percolate. They're in the back of my brain. And there's so much stuff back there that I never find them again.
I think the problem is we've all essentially got too many inboxes, haven't we?
Mm.
We've got our email inbox. We've got our WhatsApp messaging. We've got our text message inbox for family members that are not on WhatsApp yet. And then we've got our social media DMs. That's a lot where messages could be popping up. They're demanding attention. They're demanding a reply. They need something from us. And then for God's sakes, if you work at a company that uses Slack.
Yes. Oh, no, horrible.
Just my worst. Stop it. I've already got an email inbox. Don't create another one for me. It's a little poppy up sound and messages. No wonder you're feeling overwhelmed. Since smartphones were invented and we all have our emails in the palm of our hands, people expect a reply immediately to everything.
Yeah.
No matter which way they've messaged you. That needs to change. I think there almost needs to be kind of a reintroduction of the set hours where it's expected that you reply, but then beyond a certain point, you're not going to reply until the next morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe that needs to go across the whole gambit of inboxes that we have.
Yes.
Otherwise, where do you stop? Where do you start?
I'm pro not replying. I'm pro taking time. I'm pro going back to fax machines and phone calls, honestly. Or maybe just correspondence. You used to be able to send a letter in the afternoon post. Someone would have it in the morning. They could dash you off a reply. That's the fastest things worked. I like that. I think that would have been a good time for me.
Mm.
I don't like being contactable. If I'm ever very important, that will be my quirk. And people will say, oh, Miss Gowans Edlington, we don't use my first name because I'm very important.
Of course.
Doesn't like to be contacted by phone. You must write a card to her. A postcard. I love postcards, actually. Anything on them. Seaside scenes, maybe. And that's how you get anything to me. Or a fax. I like faxes. I like the sound they make. I like the weird thin paper.
Yeah.
The whole thing appeals.
Or yeah. You could just hire an assistant to answer everything for you.
Yeah, but then I'd have to talk to them. And they'd ask me questions and want immediate responses. If I knew the answer, I'd reply straight away. But I need to think about it.
Sure.
For 6 to 8 months. Until it's too late to reply, and then I feel guilt and shame. And then if I ever see those people in the street, I want to hide behind a fucking bush because I never replied to that really simple email that I could reply to in 2 seconds. And now it's too late and I hate myself. But we did talk about today being each other's assistants.
Mm.
And that would be great. We could just negotiate for each other. I could tell people your time is valuable. I can't tell people my time is valuable. How embarrassing. How arrogant.
Yeah.
But your time, I can put a price on that.
Pure solid gold.
Yeah. So, for once, Francesca, I have been watching TV.
Shut up.
And it is not just The Antiques Road Trip. That's not my recommendation, but the premise of that show is that two antiques experts, like auctioneers or valuers, get in a classic car and drive around the UK together. They go to different antique shops. At the end of each episode, they go to an auction where they sell the things that they bought in the antique shops and try and make more money than each other.
Cool.
It's great. That's not my recommendation, but that is what I'm normally watching, which is why I normally don't have recommendations, because
they're dull.
However, for once, I am watching the topical show, which is Fleischman is in Trouble.
Brilliant.
It's really good.
Mm. We're both only 2 episodes in.
We are.
So unless it really drops off a cliff, I feel it's quite promising.
I have read so much about this because, oddly, since it is talking about a really high-earning, small percentage of Americans, specifically New Yorkers, it's a very specific world that we are not a part of or even adjacent to, and I do not know anyone from / in that world. Oddly, though, it's striking a chord with me. It's striking a chord with so many people, especially Lizzie Kaplan's character slightly drowning under motherhood.
Has left the city and her Razzie magazine job for suburbia.
Yes.
To go and live the dream with kids in a big old house, white picket fence.
And actually, this inspired a piece on Vogue as well by Lucy Foster. I chose to move to the suburbs with my children. That doesn't mean it's made me happy. And I think for so many women, it struck a chord. It struck a chord. I don't even have children. It struck a chord. Because I feel like I'm getting to that age where you have to make those decisions, where people are buying houses, people are having multiple children, moving out of the city, making these big life choices and lifestyle choices. It does feel like you build up to this life that you want, and then you're supposed to just swap it overnight and be happy with the swap.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's that thing of becoming invisible as a woman, which can certainly happen when you have kids, but I think just happens as you age. In our society, women, we discussed this last podcast, your currency is to be fuckable. And when you're not, you sort of get shoved over into the corner somewhere. And okay, we're only in our 30s, but
yeah, but when all the supermodels are 16, as we discussed.
Exactly.
And when everyone's obsessed with what a 10-year-old is wearing.
Suddenly, you sort of realise that you're not a million miles away from that point where you are potentially going to fade into the invisible bracket.
Unfuckability.
But that piece in Vogue so brilliantly kind of sums up and explores that idea and that fear that I think a lot of us women have. I definitely have noticed that happening and fear it tremendously. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that being explored further in the series, as I understand it does. I think that's very poignant.
Mm. In the Lucy Foster piece, she talks about the difference between us as a generation and our mothers. And she says, my mother, born in 1950, who came of age in that apparently glorious summer of 68, was married to my dad by 1973. She had that power for 5 years. And it's that time when you come of age as a woman and suddenly you have agency, you have power over your life, you're making decisions for yourself. You're no longer following someone else's kind of school, university treadmill of following instructions given to you by somebody else. And she talks about having it for 15 years herself and mourning its passing. And I quote, "Mum believes this is why motherhood, enforced domesticity and a steady, quiet life floored me. You spent too long pleasing yourself," she'll say, not unkindly. And I do think about that. I do think about how much harder it is becoming for me as somebody who has been able to, over the last 15 years at least, decide exactly how I want my life to look, how I want my home to look, spend my days a certain way, spend my nights a certain way. Being able to be selfish and please myself, the longer I have that and the longer I do that, the harder it is to consider giving it up. And in your 20s, when you're in a shitty shared house and drinking too much at the weekend and everything feels a bit fraught and difficult and you can't really afford your London lifestyle, I was very insecure and kind of needed validation from other people and needed someone to tell me that I was interesting or pretty or whatever, a man. It was so much easier to date and consider compromising and give up freedoms because you were getting such a big thing in return. The more you have your freedom, the harder it is to give up.
Mm.
That's certainly what I'm getting when I watch it, even as someone who still lives in the city and hasn't had kids. Because it's that whole, you're fucked with every decision, basically.
Yeah.
And I don't know where we go from here. I mean, we're both very happy. We both love our lives. But I look at yours and I go, am I supposed to be doing that? And what's my cutoff time to do that? Like, how many years do I have before it's too late? And will I regret not doing that? Because everyone says you will. Lizzie Caplan seems miserable.
She does seem quite miserable.
Well, if I'm Lizzie Caplan,
you know? On the flip side, Claire Danes' character, Rachel, dumped the kids with her ex-husband and has gone off to a yoga retreat. Lovely.
I don't think she's having the best. Maybe I've watched 3 episodes, babe.
Oh no.
Because that's not how.
Spoiler. Is that not what's happened?
That's not where we are.
She's still at a yoga retreat where I am. That has sinister happened.
I'm glad you're having a nice time. I must have watched an additional episode.
Need to say, neither of us have actually read the book.
No.
But I will go back and read it. Because I do think it's brilliant. It's really interesting dynamics, really interesting characters. I like that Rachel's really unlikable at the moment. And I like that it's exploring relationships in your 40s.
Mm.
Again, we spoke about this last week, how rom-coms are featuring older characters. Obviously, this isn't a rom-com, but I feel like love and relationships is so thoroughly explored younger in life. Obviously, as someone who's 35, I find it far more interesting to discuss what happens after you've had your happily ever after and life gets in the way, jobs, kids, blah, 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 blah. Richer, I think, in content.
It's Ben watching it.
Yeah. We both really have enjoyed it.
Okay, great.
So I'm looking forward to watching more of that.
Mm-hmm. That guy.
What's he from?
He was in The Social.
Yeah, The Social.
And I hated him in that. And I hate him in this.
He
plays hateable characters really well.
He's a liver doctor that's trying to juggle work and kids.
Yeah.
You don't like him?
No. He's not likeable. Even when you're supposed to like him in those early episodes, when you're really getting his point of view and only his point of view, I still can't like him.
I tell you what is a bit depressing about the series.
Is it his divorce apartment?
Oh, that's so depressing. But this is depressing because it's true. So this guy, the actor, he's not good looking. He's never been cast as a good looking character. He's not sort of the hunky leading man. In the series, it's not communicated that he's good looking. He's just this kind of...
He's not that Hollywood glossy.
No.
Fake teeth, fake tan.
But because he's 40 something, has got a very decent job and is not a psychopath that we know of, the dating apps are completely blowing up for him and he's being able to shag women with the most amazing boobs. There's like a sex montage.
Mm.
And the women's boobs are great across the board.
Yeah.
Very jealous.
Yeah, never met a boob I didn't like.
But because he's this eligible guy, even though he's fairly potatoy in the looks department, he's a catch.
He is cleaning up And he talks about that in the show. The character, you know, discusses that actually he was never that guy. And this is the first time he's been this desirable. I don't love it as a single woman of 35 dating. I don't love that we're being given that. It's true. I don't want to see it. I don't need it.
I understand that.
Yeah.
Okay, but good one to watch. I will look forward to the third episode where sounds like poor Rachel gets into some shit potentially.
Jolly. Oh, well, we're not going to talk to you now, dear listener, for some time.
We don't know, really, do we?
We don't know. We don't know when we're coming back because Frankie's having a baby and shit's unpredictable.
Very.
She might be craving the podcast. She might be sick to the back teeth of us. Probably mostly me, because you are silent in this conversation that we had. So me.
As in the listener silent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, we'll let you know when we come back. Thank you very much for joining us for this full series. Can you even? It's been a hoot and a half, and we will see you on the flip side. Big thanks to our podcast editor, Emma Crampton. And of course, whilst we're away, please feel free to rate, review and subscribe to our podcast.
Follow us on social media for updates, i.e. Frankie's son's modelling debut.
Oh yeah, brilliant.
Following her demands being issued in this week's episode. And I don't know what I'll be up to. All sorts of weird things.
Bye.
Bye.